Good morning, 7:41 here on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout a Wednesday. And since it is a Wednesday, we have the fine folks from K-State Research and Extension joining us. And on the line, we have Jesse Gilmore to start things off. How are you doing, Jesse?
Good. How are you doing, Jay?
Yeah, good to have you on. I know we were talking off air that your puppy is growing by leaps and bounds. So that is good to hear.
Yep, they grow up so fast.
Right. Awesome. Well, got a lot to talk about in the world of agriculture and all that good stuff. You have a topic of agritourism this morning, right?
Yeah, I've got actually a couple of topics.
Yeah.
They are closely related in terms of increasing economic sustainability of production farm. So I am just now wrapping up a final project for a class that I'm in called Community Economic Development and Analysis. And this is a class where we were given a project to find ways to encourage economic development of a particular region. And I chose Crawford County. Originally, I was going to do the entire district that I'm responsible for, but that was quite a lot to... it was a little bit biting off a little bit more than I could chew, so I limited it down to Crawford County. But a lot of the things that I came up with in my paper can relate to pretty much any of the counties in our area. And what actually led me to the topic that I'm going to talk about here in a second was driving back through Oklahoma. I stopped at one of the visitor centers around Oklahoma City, and I saw that they had a map in the visitor center specifically for agritourism. And I thought that was super cool. To my knowledge, Kansas does not have anything like that, and we really should if we don't. Of course, we could. That might be something I don't know exists, but does exist. But agritourism is one operations tactic that I think a lot more farms in our area could really benefit from. When I was writing the paper, I had to look into agritourism that already exists. You can register agritourism opportunities on your farm with the Kansas Tourism Board, and they will put you all on a map together online with other agritourism opportunities in the area.
So, Jesse, real quick, what is, like, I guess, the definition of agritourism for folks who are unfamiliar with the term?
Sure. So according to the National Agricultural Law Center at the University of Arkansas, they define agritourism as any recreation, entertainment, or educational experiences that you offer on your farm that are kind of adjacent to food production, but might not necessarily be solely food production. But those experiences that you offer on farm are going to attract the public to your property and attracts them to visit agricultural operations. What I include in that definition is also hospitality. So, for example, lodging. Lodging is a pretty big economic boom to agritourism. So, you know, if you're offering bed and breakfast or, you know, some kind of place to stay for hunters who come onto your property in the fall and are allowed to hunt on your property, something like that. So that's kind of a broad definition of what agritourism is. And you can use one or more of the tactics when it comes to agritourism, but in my experience with many agritourism sites, they're just going to use one out of specialization. So I mentioned the 6 agritourism sites in Crawford County that are registered with the Kansas Tourism Board. 2 of them are pumpkin patches and Oleo Farms, and I can't remember the name of the other one off the top of my head. But they are both agritourism sites that are open seasonally. They're not going to be open during the entire year because pumpkin patches are very much a fall thing. 2 of the agritourism sites that are listed are hunting and lodging outfitters, Oak Creek Outfitters and Creekside Hunting and Lodging. And then 2 of the agritourism sites that are registered are responsible for growing food. That would be Misty Morning Farms and Leafy Green Farms. So in the production sites where they're growing food, you can come out and learn how food grows if you're part of an educational group like a school. I know some agritourism sites that I have looked into also allow, like, farmer for a day type options, where you come out and get the experiences of farming. Those you would typically find in more urban or peri-urban areas close to urban centers. But you have a glut of different options when it comes to agritourism. And the reason that I focused on agritourism is specifically because of how potentially beneficial it is to economic sustainability of a farm, essentially. Obviously, the purpose of the class that I took was economic sustainability, so we had to have some kind of economic slant to it. But there are other benefits to diversifying your operations or potentially diversifying your product if you wanted to get into specialty crop growth. But agritourism is the one that I led with because it doesn't take very much to change your current operation to accommodate for agritourism, assuming, of course, that you have a production site underpinning what you're doing with agritourism. If you have specifically just an agritourism site with no extra production, then it could get a little more risky. For example, you know, Old Yale, they don't do much farming on their property outside of the pumpkin patch experience that they have in the fall. So they aren't getting that extra income or the primary income from producing a lot of food. But it is relatively low risk, assuming you have that diversification. In Kansas, and I need to check the exact word of the law again, but they provide for limited liability of the operation when people are coming on to the property for agritourism experiences. They understand the risk, provided that you give them a waiver or have the disclaimer posted in a point of primary viewing. And, of course, that's not going to completely negate the need for things like liability insurance. I'm no lawyer, so I could definitely double-check on that. But Kansas does have laws providing for agritourism. Providing for agritourism in the event of something going wrong, which hopefully it never would.
Well, of course. But, you know, it's sounding like this would be a good opportunity if people, you know, producers out there are looking for another income stream. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of creativity that goes involved with to make something like this successful. But you mentioned lodging. Would something like if someone were to make a unique, say, Airbnb or some sort of lodging sort of location on their property, you would consider that to count towards agritourism, especially if they kind of related it into their operation to give people kind of an agricultural related experience?
Yeah, definitely. Lodging is one of the most sneakily economically successful agritourism plants that you can do. There's a lot of numbers that went into why I decided to focus specifically on that part of agritourism in my report, and I won't go into those numbers. Numbers are, especially these numbers, are pretty boring. But yeah, if you are attracting someone to your farm, even if they're not necessarily participating in farm activities themselves, that lodging is getting them to your site and providing you the extra income. There are, depending on what type of agriculture operation you're interested in, certain licensing requirements that you would need to go through. The Kansas Department, I believe it's the Kansas Department of Agriculture, has a really good checklist of all the things you would need to think about if you were interested in doing an agritourism site on your property. They also have a very, very robust 126-page manual specifically talking about agritourism and all of the different things you would need to think about. But when I was doing the agritourism research for this project, there were, besides lodging, there was one other part of the agriculture experience that I'm not convinced is really getting enough focus, especially for how important it is in our area, and that would specifically be cattle. Beef cattle ranching and farming is the third largest sector in Crawford County in terms of total output. The first that's actually done on the farm results in about $62 million of output for Crawford County. and definitely far and away the most employment. But there were no at least none registered with Kansas Tourism. There were no agritourism sites listed that have to do with digging into the livestock aspect of it. Because I imagine, and this might be me assuming based on my limited experience with livestock, that there are kids out there that would be very interested in having livestock experiences. You know, things like petting zoos, milking cows, and the like. Crawford County alone, according to the 2017 Census of Agriculture, had over 43,000 head of cattle in the county. So I imagine, based on my experiences, that Montgomery, Labette, and probably Wilson, too, have pretty similar numbers of cattle that they could leverage into their agritourism opportunities if they wanted to.
Sure.
With how important livestock is to our area, that's one that I would like to see get more focus. And I'm sure Wendy would like to see that get more focus.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's something that's always popular at the fair. You know, they have the birthing center and the milking barn and all that sort of thing. So kids love that. And it's good for them to, you know, figure out that stuff just doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from, it actually comes from other places. So that is really good, Jesse. Now, you mentioned earlier specialty crop production. Did you want to go into that in any detail?
Yeah, I'll touch on that a little bit. So, obviously, I'm the horticulture agent. I'm a little bit biased when it comes to fruit and vegetable production, and I would love to see that happen on a bigger scale. But I understand, and what I actually found when I was doing my research for my thesis back in graduate school is that business management, and especially getting into new markets that you're unfamiliar with, is basically the gatekeeper to getting into specialty crop production. If you're not comfortable trying to get into new markets, even if you're totally confident in your growing capabilities, you know you can grow the vegetables and the fruit. If you don't have that confidence in, you know, how to make a profit off of your fruits and vegetables, you are not going to go into that in any great amount. And local food is something that I learned a lot about when I was at school. You know, farmers market, there's actually a couple other options for direct marketing, including things like farm stands. I've been to quite a few farm stands in Labette County, and also what's known as community supported agriculture, which I think is a really cool model. And I did not know about this until I was working at a farm that had a CSA and I was responsible for putting that together. It's basically a subscription service for local food where the consumer pays upfront for the food, and then the farmer uses that money to basically as capital for starting up the growing season. And then during the course of the subscription time period, which is usually 13 weeks, could be also be 26 weeks, but typically 13 weeks in a season, they will provide that subscriber a set amount of food every week, and what they grow depends on, you know, and you can tailor the CSA to the specific consumer if they want leafy greens or if they want fruiting vegetables like tomatoes, and I imagine most people would because tomatoes are the most popular garden vegetable, then that would be a decent business model too. But far and away, the one that's most common is farmers markets. I'm not really even sure I need to describe farmers markets.
No, I don't think so.
doing the research on this project, it was amazing to me how much growth you saw in farmers markets. Just in 1994, there were about 1,700 farmers markets across the United States, and in 2019, that number is just shy of 9,000.
Wow.
So, yeah, the explosion of farmers markets shows the interest in local food. But one of the things that I did as part of the project was using my experience as an extension agent, I made some recommendations on what crops would be most sustainable, most desirable to consumers, and basically had the combination of easy to grow, few pests, few disease and insect issues, and desirable at market. There are also some other benefits, which I'll touch on, but the fruits that I kind of landed on are strawberries. Strawberries are very easy to sell. You're not going to, unless you have someone who's allergic, you're usually not going to have someone say, nah, I don't like strawberries. Blackberries are the bramble fruit that I would grow. Raspberries usually get a little bit more profit, but the growing habits of raspberries compared to blackberries are much more complicated and require a lot more management. And then as far as tree fruits go, pears are what I would recommend. Everyone wants to grow peaches and nectarines, but the pesticide load that you need in order to get fruit worth selling is not worth it. It would wipe out any extra profit you would get off of your peaches. Apples, a little bit less so in terms of pesticide load, but pears are definitely, in terms of the amount of fruit you get off of the tree and the quality of fruit that you get off of the tree, pears are going to be your best bet. And then for vegetables, the ones that I came up with for ease of growth and desirability, for the cool season, you've got beets and carrots, which are the root crops, and then you've got cabbage, lettuce, and spinach, which are the leaf crops. Cabbage, you might have to fight pests a little bit more on than lettuce and spinach, but all of those are cool season crops, which means they grow in the spring and the fall. You would get to harvest, well, you would get to crops out of them in a given year. And then warm season crops, tomatoes, peppers, and sweet potatoes. If you're trying to diversify into commercial vegetable production, tomatoes are a must. They are going to expect tomatoes every week at the farmer's market because they want tomatoes. You are never not going to sell out of tomatoes.
Now, Jesse, you've got about a minute left, but I am curious, like, what kind of scale are we talking when you're recommending, you know, vegetable production? I mean, I imagine, like, a whole section of tomatoes, and I don't know if that's, you know, we're not going to turn Southeast Kansas into Southern California, but what are you thinking on scale?
Nope. And that is, for the sustainability of something like this, always start small. Always start small. Don't sink a ton into the project at the start. When I worked at Cultivate Kansas City in KCK, it was 2 acres. About an acre and a half of that was in produce, and the rest of it was structures and borders and land like that. And it took about 6 of us, all we had, to harvest and, you know, scout for pests and things like that. But that was also a very diversified farm. We grew pretty much everything except broccoli at that farm. So if you're starting with fewer crops, it will be much more manageable. But that's about the scale I would recommend. I would probably not go any higher than that. And if you are interested in having, you know, successive crops for each week at the farmer's market, succession planting is definitely worth looking into as well. But there's a lot of good publications out there. You can find the Kansas Garden Guide online or at some extension offices for a purchase of a physical copy. And like I mentioned before, the Agritourism Manual from the Kansas Department of Agriculture is also very, very helpful.
All right, Jesse, a great topic. How can they get a hold of you if they have any questions, the listeners?
They can call our Girard office at 620-724-8233, and they can email me at jr637@ksu.edu.
All right, awesome, Jesse. Thank you so much. Really interesting, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
All right, you have a good morning.
You too, and we'll be right back with more.